Welcome to Twos Talk with Tosh, Dino, and Donnie.
Fellas, welcome back.
Donnie,
how's it going?
Oh, things are great here in the Border City.
Yeah?
How about where you're at? How are you?
Things are sore.
Overcast and windy.
You want to talk about why you're sore?
Yeah, sure.
Please?
Because we're stupid.
Because we're stupid. Yeah.
Is that a reason? I didn't know it was a reason. I'm going to use it from this point forward.
Because we're easily talked into doing dumb things.
Yeah.
That's how it works. Yeah.
Well, what dumb things did you do?
Well, we thought it'd be a good idea. There was no Masters Provincials this year, right? With COVID, with no Nationals. And so some of the younger guys on our Masters team said, well, why don't we go in the Open Provincials and play against, you know, the Angels and, you know, those teams. And we were like, at the time, may have had an adult beverage in our hand or something. Because at the time, it probably sounded like a really good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then we played. And it was 7 games and basically, you know, 2.5, 3 days. And that's a lot.
Have you heard from Razor? Like, do you know if he's still alive?
I'm not sure. No, haven't heard from Razor. He took... He caught seven games. Yeah, he caught 7 games and took approximately 38 foul tips, I would think. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
Oh, Frankie.
One hit him square in the jaw and dropped in front of him. That's how square it hit him.
I can confirm Razor texted me this morning, said, hey, looking forward to the weekend. So he's alive. Okay. I don't know how well he is. He's alive.
He was probably in a prone position.
I bet he's
in the middle. He was pretty sore. So I got this. Okay, so this is how Masters has changed over the years. So when we were younger, you know, we were, you know, full of grit and vinegar and going hard. And, you know, our ball bags consisted of gear, right? Now our ball bags consist of Advil, tape. But we have a new addition to our ball bags. You know those massaging guns that look like a drill?
Oh, yeah.
We had 6 of those going on the bench, man.
Yep.
It was awesome.
Sometimes two on one guy.
it was really bad. Good. Okay. So I won't let on who our guest is, but our guest will probably appreciate this story. And I don't know if Dino, you want to tell it or not.
Yeah, I do. I know which one you're talking about, but I think you're talking about the warmups.
Yeah. Or is that a shot? You waiting out for shots?
No. We have a huge apology to Cookie.
Yeah.
You know, he was doing the plate there in that, the game Sunday morning against Bruno. And, you know, like as you get a little older, I don't normally throw the old drop curve, but I'm looking for things to help me a little bit, right? Give somebody a different look here and there. So
throwing everything I can at him.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Bar doll, Crisco. Yeah. No, it was everything. And so we're warming up before the game even starts. And Razor, you know, we're communicating, which is usually
is, right. Brent Chadwick. Right?
Brent Chadwick. And I haven't seen him for a long time. So this was the first time, and I was kind of excited to have him back there. Cause he's been back behind the plate quite a bit for us over the years. And, so it was kind of cool to have him back there, and he's crouched over top of Razor's right shoulder. And, I say to Razor, it's always like the first, we have 5 pitches at the beginning of the game. So it's always drop, 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 rise, rise. And then we throw her down. Right. So I went drop, drop. And then I told Razor, I gave him the motion for the drop curve, right? Let's throw this in there. Just see how what it looks like today. And, he hops over to the other side of the plate, and I'm like, what are you doing over there? Right. So I'm thinking that he's, I don't know, just having a brain fart or something. And so I get him moved over to the other side of the plate where I usually throw that pitch. And I throw it, and it doesn't go down. It kind of goes like a rise ball. I don't get over on it. It just kind of, it curves. And Razor does not even flinch. Like, it's not even close to, he's not even close to touching it. It hits Cookie right in the beak. Like, and he stumbled back. Yeah, we're laughing, but we're glad he's okay, hopefully.
Yeah.
You know, he stumbles back, and then he looks at me, and he had this look like, did you just do that on purpose? Like, you could, you know, I'm just kind of imagining, and I'm like, oh, no. And, yeah, I was very, very, it was bad. It was bad because, you know, I wasn't expecting to get too many strike calls in the first inning. That's for sure. Maybe our guest will chime in on that if that's ever happened to her in her career.
Oh, but, way to tip it off a little bit.
So major, major apologies to Cookie. That was
definitely
not on purpose.
And Patty and I are waiting for the throwdown, right? We're at second base and we're kind of talking. I just happened to look to see Dino throwing his glove out for the curve thing. And immediately Razor moves over, like Dino said. So I'm thinking, I don't think he knows what's coming.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see what happens. Hmm. Let's just sit back and see what happens here, folks. That ball literally went right over top of Razor's mask. But mm-hmm. Razor said, well, I didn't think he was standing there. And it hit Brent right in the face.
Yeah, yeah.
It was unreal.
So I checked on him later on in the day, and he said, I said, so how you doing there? You know, how you feeling? He said, well, the jaw's a little sore. We'll see how the ride home is. So hopefully he... Because, I mean, you know, if it's a long ride home and you're tired like we were at the end of the weekend, sunflower seeds is my go-to when I want to stay awake on the road. So
probably not when a bad
I don't think he'd have been, might have been jujubes or something like that.
But I will pump your tires here a little bit. So we played Bruno. We were fortunate enough to get a good start. We won 7-0. But Dino threw a perfect game. Perfect five.
Well, that's still a game.
I'm sure, because after he hit Brent in the face, I'm thinking we're never getting a call, right? But it worked out.
We joked it'd be cool to see what the oldest combo for an A provincial would be in age for the battery. Game. Yeah, I think because we were 90, we're combined 99 years.
99 years, him and Razor.
So
they look like 150, but 99.
Dino, that's a hell of a time to decide to throw something new in the warm-up, hey? First five. Let's just try something new here. See what happens.
By 40 years, let's throw something in. It's a little different in 40 years. So we'll just throw one in there.
I warmed up with it, but I just hadn't thrown it before the game very much. I thought I'd throw it in there. And Razor didn't catch the drop curve signal. And
Was this before or after Razor took one also in the face? Maybe Razor wasn't all there, you know?
It was after. No, it was after because Razor took some against the Hawks the night before.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But the one he took against Bruno was the worst one. That hit him square and then right in the
noggin.
So a hat's off to Razor then, because that's not easy to do regardless of your age. To come back as strong as Razor did, he receives the ball well. But I've seen that very look on Razor's face. If you remember a podcast from the past where Dino decided to throw a few balls in Donnie Barrels to Razor, and he sat up nice and square and didn't move. And the ball went right over him. Yep.
Yeah. Mm. A few in the chest.
Yeah. Good for Razor. Good for both of you. So congratulations, guys. In 99 years, doesn't matter how old you are. That's a perfect game. That's fantastic against a good hitting team. Good for you.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. It was good. Congratulations to the Angels for the weekend.
They played well and Zippy threw great. It was good. It was just fun. You know what? At the time, you're not sore. I was just having a blast. And I'll tell you what, that Friday night game or Saturday night game, 8 o'clock, it started a little bit late, got going about 8:30, quarter nine. It was still 30 degrees, no wind, no bugs. It was like playing an ISC game in the Midwest, you know, like in the stands where, you know, there's a bunch of people there. It was just awesome. Now, Randerson was throwing. So at night and it was, you know, he's throwing pretty hard. So that part wasn't fun. But playing in that atmosphere again was pretty cool.
Congratulations. Shout out to Zippy, who does play for us a bit too. Happy for him. What's going on this weekend, though? Anything fun?
Tryouts, man. Mm-hmm. Good lead in, buddy. Yeah. Way to play dumb on that one.
Not playing dumb, boys.
Tryouts this weekend. Then Tuesday, Wednesday at Edmonton, and then back to Saskatoon on Saturday, Sunday, the 28th, 29th again. So awesome. The response has been great. We're sitting at 239 kids trying out this year, up about, 60, 70 from last year. So really cool. And a lot of talented kids coming out. So it's going to be an awesome tryout. Hopefully the kids have a blast. And our teams are going to be solid this year.
Hopefully the instructors are on their A game this weekend. Yep. We'll see how it goes. I'm excited. Yeah, it's a busy, busy 10-day window here, a week window for the program.
For sure. Yep.
Well, okay. So, you know, apologies to our listeners who are our 70 listeners who are out there wondering, hey, why was there no cast yesterday? We had a bit of a scheduling conflict, but we're really lucky to have this guest. Been on before, a very unique perspective on the game. And so thank you for coming back on. Frankie, unmute, because I know you might not. So unmute your phone. Let's get you going. Frankie Billingsley, welcome to the cast.
Oh, thanks so much, guys, for having me. And congratulations on your amazing weekend. And Dino, perfect game for five innings. I mean, oh, I don't care how old you are. A pitcher should be so proud of that.
Awesome.
Well, well, and you know what we should say too, just before like the seven run, so the seventh run for the Mercy was actually me trotting in from third on a pass ball. But the best part was Dino.
I had to get out of the way.
He played decoy. He actually fell down and rolled around in the dirt. People thought he was hurt, and the catcher just let the ball go, and I just kind of moonwalked in. And then he sprung right up again. It was like it was planned. It was
amazing.
Dina, did you pull the Statue of Liberty play? Is that what you're saying? You pulled the old Statue of Liberty.
Oh, my.
No, I just pulled my feet out and fell on my face, basically.
No, it looked like a Vegas casino blowing up is what it looked like. Not like the Statue of Liberty.
Would you call that a similar to the Houston? Was it planned?
Maybe.
No, Houston? Stop it.
Yeah, Houston, we have a problem. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Get out of the way. Warning.
Yeah.
So, Frankie, welcome back again, by the way. What's new, Frankie? Anything fun you want to talk about? Do you have any experiences maybe that you'd like to share?
Oh, Donnie. Well, it is actually really unbelievable to me that to think about the fact that just a little over 2 weeks ago, I was just finishing my experience in Tokyo at the Olympics. I mean, it's really hard for me to believe that like less than a month ago, actually as of today, a month ago, I was getting on a plane to go over to Tokyo to the Olympics.
Crazy. It's one of those experiences too, where, you know, and I mean, you've experienced it before because you've gone and done major championships, but I always found it was weird that, you know, we can go to an ISC or a World Championships or something like that, and you're in that atmosphere and you're walking around and, you know, people are, hey, how's it going? And oh, you guys are doing great. And you're almost like a rock star a little bit. And then you come home and you sit at your desk at work and you go, it's like it never happened, right? So that's probably the surreal part, because I know, you know, I've felt that feeling before where you go to a big event and you come home and then you're right back into your daily life. Right. So being the, you know, the high level softball umpire you are, I mean, I'm sure the players feel the exact same way. Right. So it's pretty cool.
How was the trip over? Did you go with anybody, or were you kind of solo part of the way, or how did you? Before we get into all the good stuff, like how was your trip over and stuff?
The trip over was okay. I was solo the whole way, which was kind of sad. I thought maybe I might get a chance to travel with my Canadian colleague, Genevieve from Quebec, but that wasn't the case. And I did have, in planning for dealing with the COVID, the government had very strict measures about getting in. So we had to have COVID testing 96 hours in advance and 72 hours in advance of our flight. And so I get to Chicago and they actually have to get clearance from the government for every single traveler. And I get called over and they say, your COVID test has expired. I'm like, what? So they wanted the COVID test to be done from the flight to Tokyo. And I did it from my first international flight. So it was just a few hours too old.
My goodness.
So I was like, okay, so what do I do? And they're like, well, you need a new one. So where can I go? And there was a COVID testing site across the street from the airport. And I was like, how much time am I dealing with here? They're like, you have 35 minutes.
Oh my God.
And there was a fellow that was sort of running, managing the whole steward airline fleet of people that were checking people in. And he was listening to the conversation. And she goes, I don't think you're going to make it. And I'm like, I am supposed to be going to Tokyo to participate in the Olympics. I'm going to do whatever I have to. So like, give me a chance here. So she wrote out the instructions of where to go. And he said, I'm going to phone the government on your behalf. And so anyway, I run to this. So picture me mask on in an airport, two carry-on bags, sprinting in the airport, outside, over to this testing center. I'm just about to pay, and he calls me and says, the government is going to allow your test. And I'm like, oh, okay, great. Now, how much time do I have to get back to get on the flight?
Yeah, no kidding.
He's like, well, like 17
minutes.
How much
time do you have to apologize to all the people that you knocked over on your way through the airport? Sorry, oh, excuse me, sorry.
You've seen me, Tosh. I'm not going to be able to knock anyone over. So anyway, yeah, it was a little bit like frightening because I didn't know if I was actually, and we were actually supposed to be texting when we got on the flight just so people knew. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to get on this flight. So they actually started phoning on my behalf as well. And so it all worked out, but it was like, oh my God.
That would be a nightmare.
For anyone who's not familiar, the Chicago airport is a small city also, and it's not easy to get around, and it's they don't make it easy to leave, and it's like an IKEA. Once you're in there, you're sort of trapped in there. So that couldn't have been any easier to get around either. And the panic must have made you, the adrenaline must have shot through the roof.
Yeah, and you know what? The first, I think because I was so tired, like I had been up at 5 a.m, I was at the Toronto airport like 3 hours early. And I was a little bit tired. And so my first reaction is I'm pretty sure there was at least one tear that rolled down my cheek. Because I was like, oh my God, I might not be getting on this plane. So anyway.
It must be an umpire thing. Cause I think when Dino hit Chadwick in the face, he started crying too. So sorry, Brent. Sorry.
Yeah.
I wish I'd known that. I just saw Chadwick the other day in a meeting. I wish I'd known that he got beaned.
Yeah. Well, he's probably talking a little funny.
He probably doesn't remember.
Oh, so, side of his mouth.
Maybe he doesn't remember. That's right. Who knows? Who knows?
That would explain the twitch.
Yeah. So, Frankie, I know that the teams went over and did some exhibition stuff. Were you able to do some games before the Olympics started once you got over there? Or once you got there, you went into quarantine? Or how did that all work?
Yeah, our supervisor, whom you may know, Bob Stanton, was trying to arrange exhibition games for us, and he was not able to. So we basically got there 72 hours in advance of the first pitch and basically just got there, hotel meetings, and then on the diamond.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So no easing into it. Just here you go. Jump in the deep end. Where you go.
Exactly. And that was really interesting. There were 13 working umpires at the championship, and that was really different because there was a range of how many games people could actually do during the last 24 months, right? Yeah. Like I did 4 games on diamond in 20 months before I went over to Tokyo.
Wow. Yeah.
4.
I was going to say like, it's hard. Like, you know, players can go out and do BP, hit off machines, whatever they can do. Like for umpires, like, I don't know how that works. Do you stand behind your kids and have your husband throw balls at them, or how do you, you know, I don't know what you do there.
Yeah, well, once the COVID measures kind of started to relax a little bit, I moved from Alberta to Ontario. And so I contacted somebody I knew really well. And I said, do you know a pitcher and a catcher that would just like to come out and throw some pitches for me? And so I did that, which was really helpful. But yeah, it's just not the same as being in a game, right? So
No, for sure.
But you do what you have to. Yeah. Do what you think you need to prepare. So
I bet for the pitcher and catcher who threw a BP session that was umpired, I'm sure that wasn't the same for them either. That's probably a unique first timer thing too.
Yeah, they were great. I mean, they just like it was a brother combo, pitcher catcher, and he hadn't thrown for quite a while either, so he appreciated the practice because they were getting ready for their season to start.
Oh, good.
But it was probably weird for him to just throw pitches to somebody like. But I really appreciated them coming and doing that for me.
So you umped 4 games in 20 months, and then you go to the biggest tournament in the game. Dean and Tosh just played 7 games in 2 days. There's a disparity there. So how are you feeling? First of all, let's talk about, we talked to our last two guests about the humidity and the conditions in Tokyo. How were they for you coming from, I guess Ontario is more humid than say Saskatchewan or Alberta, but how was the difference for you getting used to and acclimated? Because the teams we talked to, they were there for, you know, a couple of weeks getting ready and preparing their bodies and hydrating, and you had 72 hours. So how did you get yourself ready to be in that environment?
Well, 2 things. One, I had the great fortune to be in Japan 2 years ago, 2018, at the World Championships, and they had a record-breaking heat wave that summer. And so that was unbelievable. So I had that experience. And then too, we weren't outside as much as we were in 2018. Like, because the Olympic Games, we were doing like one game a day. It was a lot easier to acclimatize because we weren't outside for like two or three games a day. And it actually wasn't as warm as it was in 2018. But I did feel quite empathetic for the people that had never been there before, because it is a real, it's a real shock to the system if you're, if you've never experienced that kind of heat before. And I did notice as the Olympics progressed that some sports advocated to move competition times, like the Canadian and Sweden soccer teams advocated to change the time of the final, as an example. And there were some, there were some sports that just were like, like some of the track and field athletes really found it tough to compete because of the heat. So I think I was really fortunate that I had the chance to experience even hotter a couple of years ago. So this wasn't as stifling, in my humble opinion. But like I said, people that had never experienced it, it's really different.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay. So talk about your first game. Who did you, who were you on the field with in terms of crew, and what game did you do?
So the very first game that I got the chance to do was Italy versus the United States. The crew was Ayaka Sasahashima on home plate from Japan, myself on first base. Second base was Miki Yabe from Japan, and third base was Mariana Prins from the Netherlands. And so I would say, one, as soon as we came out, there was a bit of like, oh my God, it's an all-female crew, which I also noticed when the schedule came out. It was probably the first time in my entire international career that there was multiple instances of female crews, including the final game, which was a first in Olympic history.
Don't jump ahead.
Sorry. We'll get there. So yeah, no, so I was, it was really, it was really cool. It was really cool to be a part of the first female crew of the Olympic Games. And, it was a really fun game. Italy was coming in ranked sixth out of the six teams, and it, and the US was coming in ranked number one. And it was a 2-0 game.
Yeah.
Like, I think for me, I think the pandemic actually was a blessing for some athletes and some teams. Like, some of the games that happened there were absolutely, like, outstanding. Exactly what you want. At the best event for people to highlight their attributes at athletes, it actually was the best showcase of athleticism and softball. It was out, it was unbelievable. And the athletes, you could tell looking at them that they had invested time, effort, energy into their own development, because they might not have had the opportunity to play a bunch of games. So it was really, really cool. Like the Canadian team, for example, when I saw them for the first time in June, those were the four games I did. I was like, oh my God, they look cut. You know, yeah. I was excited for them. And what it translated to on the diamond was they were quicker and they were stronger. And I was like, I was really pumped for them. I figured they were going to, I knew that they were going to do well there. So I was really excited for them that that's exactly what happened.
So the four games you did before were at least Olympic games. They weren't the Pirates and Irma Tigers in Irma, Alberta. They were top level, you know?
They were awesome. I did the Team Canada versus Team Mexico in a four-game series, and that ended up being the bronze medal game at the Olympics. So yes, those four games were absolutely awesome and exactly what I needed. And I like sucked every single thing I could out of those four games, because I knew they were probably going to be the only four games I was going to get to do.
So just an odd question from someone who doesn't know, but you did your first game with two Japanese and one Dutch umpire. Was there any communication issues, or was there any kind of a, was there anything there that was more challenging than normal?
No. And you know, because we had extra time to prepare, Bob and a few of us kind of chatted about, you know, what would we like to do with this extra time? And so we, one of the things we decided to do is to have monthly conference calls. So it kind of really brought us closer together off the diamond as a crew. And then 2 months before we arrived in Tokyo, three of us took the lead on, let's put together a document with all of the different topics that we normally talk about before a game. And let's, here's all the topics. Do we agree that we've got everything? Do we have agreement on the content? And then we translated it into all of the different languages so that we didn't have to cover the same things before every single game. That was huge, because then when you're there, you can actually talk about team tendencies and things that might happen in the game rather than focusing on those general kind of topics. So that was really great. So no, we didn't really have any communication issues, certainly not based on language, because we had done that work before we got there.
Did you know any of the umpires before the Olympics? I'm just assuming because you've worked, you know, some other world championships. Were there umpires that you already knew?
Yeah, so when World Baseball Softball found out that softball might be coming back into the Olympics in 2016, the umpires were kind of brought into that conversation from the perspective that starting in 2016, this is when the tryout process is beginning. So starting that year, I met people that were with me in Tokyo.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
And so the list just sort of started to get a little smaller as we went along. And yeah. So, yeah, there were people in Tokyo that I met in 2016 that I worked with at least three or four times along the way.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. So start talking about your week then. As you start to progress through, you did obviously the first game, all female crew, which is fantastic. Talk about leading up to, we're going to talk about obviously the gold medal game, but talk about your week leading up to that game.
Yeah. So I just, oh my goodness. I don't know. I'm one of those people that I just felt so grateful to be there. And I felt so grateful that Tokyo put all of the safety measures in place to tell people that, yes, we can have this and we're going to keep people safe. So for me, every time I walked on the diamond, I was like, and then running into whatever position I was going to, seeing those rings everywhere, it was just like, I really don't think I stopped smiling ever. I'm not sure. So for me, just every time I got the chance to be assigned to a game was just a real, I just wanted to savor every minute. So the first base assignment on the first day, and then the second day I did Mexico, Japan home plate, which was, oh my God, such a great game. I don't know if you might have heard, might not have, but I, in the top of the seventh inning, Yukiko Ueno, who was the winning pitcher in the gold medal game from Japan, she's been clocked at like 114, 115 kilometers an hour. She throws a fastball inside rise. The Mexico batter just gets a graze of it and it clocks me in the mask. And I've never been knocked over before, but it knocked me off my feet.
Wow.
So we were in the top of the seventh inning and it was a tie game. I ended up finishing the game and Japan won 3-2 in the bottom of the eighth inning on the absolute most beautifully executed squeeze play I have ever seen in my life. So like just such a great game. And within 12 hours of the game being over, someone from Australia made a TikTok video of my fall. And it was just like, and it just was all over the internet and everything. And actually it was such a great, like at the end of the video, like it basically is like, oh my God, a softball umpire gets hit by a foul ball during live play. And they didn't know if she'd be able to come back. And then at the end, but she regained her composure and finished the game. And then you see like Japan and Mexico both clapping. And it's like, that's the Olympic spirit. And I thought it was such a great, like, I did not think I was going to go to Tokyo and like have a head injury, but,
wow.
Yeah, so that was pretty like it was a great game. And then from there, like second base assignments for USA Australia, USA Japan, which both were, USA Australia was a 2-1 game, USA Japan was a 2-1 game. And then there was a third base assignment in there. Like I had the chance to do two extra inning games. Like they were, the games themselves were just so competitive, such a great way to highlight our amazing sport. That's exactly what you want to see at the best tournament there is to be.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So that's gotta be go ahead, Donnie.
Well, no, you were talking, but I have a two part question. Let's go back to your first game. First base assignment. Were there any close plays? And part B, to tip your hand, does the tie go to the runner always for you? Or is that kind of a situational thing?
You know what? When I was in the game, it felt like every play was close. And it felt like every, like, it just felt like there was like every play was at first. And it felt like, and I was just kind of like, oh my God, what's going on? And then I think after the second one, I was kind of like, this is exactly what you want, Frankie. This is exactly the what you want when you're at the Olympics. You want to be in the like in the middle of, you don't want a game where nothing happens.
No.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was really, it was great. There was probably, I would like in my mind, there was probably like five or six really close plays throughout the game at the at first base. And but it might not have been. It just felt like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it was a really, really great way to start the week.
Well, I myself, as a runner, have never been involved in a close play at first base, so I don't know what it's like, but I'd like to know your perspective as to if I do ever get involved in one, if the fielder falls or whatever.
Well, on a double, on a double though, Donnie, like yeah. to the fence, they, yeah. you've made it pretty close.
I've made it very close, yeah. I like to keep people guessing, you know. I want the game to be exciting. There's nothing more boring in the game than a stand-up double, you know. There's no, there's yeah. nothing to do, right? But okay, so the second question I had for you was you did home plate Mexico and Japan. You just mentioned Ueno was throwing for Japan. Who threw for Mexico? And can you talk about the movement that and the locations that these two pitchers were on TV? They were painting spots and the ball was moving and changeups were unbelievable. Can you talk a bit about that experience behind the plate?
So Mexico threw Aaron O'Toole. And I wasn't expecting that. I actually was expecting Dallas Escobedo to pitch. Dallas has been their go-to and it just so happens every single time I've had Mexico on the plate, I've always called balls and strikes for Dallas. So I just like was thinking that was going to happen because that's been my, and so I was pleasantly like, oh, it's not Dallas. It's going to be Aaron. And I haven't called a game for Aaron in a long time. Hadn't up to that point. And Ueno, the last time I called balls and strikes for Ueno was probably in the World Championship in 2018. It was probably only for an inning or two. But since then, they've been using her in fuller games, like from start to finish. So I was like, wow, I didn't think they'd pitch Ueno in that game. And I was like, oh my God, this is going to be awesome. So right even as soon as I got the lineup cards, I was like, I was pumped. I was excited. And they did not disappoint me. Like they are too, well, first of all, Ueno's in a class all of her own. She can just like hit spots and change speeds. And like, it is a beautiful thing to be a part of. It's a privilege to call balls and strikes for someone like that. Aaron O'Toole, in my humble opinion, and I did get the chance to say this to her after her bronze medal performance against Canada, I felt like she pitched better than I had ever seen her pitch in all the years I've been working with her at the Olympics. And what a great way to perform. Like you've come to the best stage that you can possibly compete in as an athlete. And you did absolutely your absolute best. Like I had never seen her pitch like that. And not just one game, but multiple games throughout the week. So I was like, even though I had been knocked off my feet in that game, after the game, I actually went over to home plate and grabbed a handful of dirt and just like held on to it for a second because I didn't know if I was going to get another plate assignment. As it turned out, I did not. But like that was just, I just didn't want to forget that way I felt in that moment, right? That's at
that awesome.
Time.
That's awesome.
Very cool.
So the question has to be asked because you are an umpire and we're all players and we don't always agree. Are there any calls you want back or was there anything, did you think you were bang on all week? What was your assessment of your own performance?
You know what? I usually gauge my performance from like, sometimes we know within ourselves when we've made a mistake, right? I didn't necessarily have that, but there might be times where a player or a coach might say something. And I always kind of like, you guys know me. I take that to heart because they're not usually saying that unless they really, you know, I think there were maybe some instances where people were reacting emotionally, even though the umpires might've been correct because it's the biggest stage there is.
Sure.
But I do think there might've been instances where, oh, okay, maybe something was not right there. Mm-hmm. But they were so honed in on their own goal, which was winning, that there weren't really any major issues with umpires and coaches or players during the week. Mm-hmm. And there certainly was no friction. But as the week went on, I don't know if you fellas watched or anything, but I did notice that as the week went on, there were more instances of coaches approaching umpires and asking for, can you just go and check with your partners and, you know, mm-hmm. such things like that. I didn't happen to be in any of those situations, but I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that I didn't make any mistakes kind of thing.
Frankie, were you privy to Coach Smith's, you know, the call there that they kind of had to protest and all that situation? Do you have any comment on that? Like, were you able to kind of reason through some stuff there or give us a little insight?
Well, it's, you know, I wasn't at the Diamond when it happened. I was at the hotel. So I kind of didn't, I knew it had to be something about the DP Flex just based on the fact that Danielle had come in the game and then she mm-hmm. had left and then Mark was talking to the officials and then he pulled the girls off the field. I'm like, it's got to have something to do with the DP Flex because Lori is never batting, right? Yeah. She's always in the flex position. So I figured that out as much on my own. But then when they got back, it had something to do with how he was substituting for the flex. And he just chose to protest in that instance. And the protest committee actually upheld what he was trying to do. So,
yeah, Smitty was on and talked a little bit about it and gave us his perspective. I was just curious, maybe from an umpire's side of things, it obviously isn't quite so, you know, clear as what we think it is as players and coaches sometimes. So,
yeah, I think in that instance, I was just really glad that there was a way for the team and the coach to exercise some level of, I really want to do this thing. And I think I should be able to. So what do I need to do to be able to get somebody to tell me? And so yeah. I was glad that there was an opportunity for a protest committee to sort of listen to all the different sides and say, well, in this instance, this is what we think should happen.
Right. That's good because it didn't, I mean, you don't want something like that to have a bearing on a result. And it wasn't like he obviously wasn't trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. He was told he could do it all the way through the game. And then when he did pull the trigger on it, that's when the issue came up. But
absolutely.
Okay. So let's get into it. So how, first off, let's set this up a little bit. When you got your assignments, was it a situation where you got your assignments at the start of the week? Was it day to day? You know, like in our case, we run to the coach's door to see if our name's on the lineup, you know, like how does that work for you?
So at these kinds of things, it's usually daily. Mm-hmm. We get the assignments at night. For this, we got the first 2 days and then after that it was day by day.
Right.
Yep. And so, it's always at night.
Okay. So it's the day before the two big games and you're, you know, Frankie's sitting in her room, rocking back and forth, wondering if she's going to get one. How did that come about? How did that assignment come about?
That one actually, I'm going to cough. Hang on. Sorry.
All good.
Our supervisor actually asked, Bob actually asked to speak with us as a crew before they emailed the assignments out.
Yeah.
And I really actually love and appreciate that sentiment that anyone could be anywhere in these two games.
For sure.
But the reality is I only have so many spots. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you also have to factor in that the bronze medal game was out for, you know, two Canadians because Canada was playing in it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the Japan USA game, four umpires were out of that because the American and the three Japanese officials can't do that game. And, you know, I would just say that when he read out the assignments, I mean, if you're there with the right attitude, no matter what happens, you're gonna react the right way.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I was honored to be assigned to be the off-field official in the gold medal game. I just to be a part of the first all-female crew at the Olympics in the final was amazing. And it was it was like icing on the cake.
Yeah, no kidding. So what's next? I mean, you missed the Irma tournament, right? So,
terrible. Yeah. We missed you there.
So, yeah. So what's on the bucket list now? Is there anything left that you want to do in this game?
Oh, that's such a great question. You know what? On field, I mean, I've done everything I think that I want to do. I still... there's part of me that, and softball, I don't want to disrespect Softball Canada. Softball Canada has been so amazing to me, and I will give back to it for years and years to come. There's a part of me that would still love to do an ISC event.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've done qualifiers, but I mean, like an ISC event would be like really cool. Whether or not that will ever happen is, you know, who knows? I think there's so much now that I've had the chance to go and do the Olympics and be a part of that. I can't wait to now come back and mentor other officials, promote umpiring with women, young women in particular, and try to inspire more players to think about other aspects of the game, because really the reality is players actually make such great coaches and umpires if they ever made that transition, right? So I look forward to that. And I also look forward to continuing my work on the Officials Development Committee of Softball Canada. You know, that the Officials Development Committee kind of sets the tone and direction and where we're going and the vision. And so I've really enjoyed that. I'm in my second year on that, working with Jeff Whipple. And so that's been really great. So lots of, and evaluating and teaching. And so there's lots of things to do. And I'll still be an on-diamond official, but I don't necessarily think I need to travel internationally. Like, I think other people, it's such a cool thing to be somewhere and to see your name on a scoreboard, and the way they identify you is your country flag. Like, that's just so, it just blows my mind.
Yeah.
Easy, Frankie. We don't need another crier on the podcast. Smitty, we've had all these different people that have been crying.
I have a question that may get her there. So, it's the question that has to be asked, because I mean, you were on the cast before and you talked about your start and all these different things. Think back now, like, were there moments, was there a moment where you actually thought about how you got going and where you were standing at first base and you're just going, okay, wow.
Where
was your very first game, Frankie?
My very first game I ever did was on Diamond 4 at John Fry Park. And my partner was Al Shendick.
Oh, that's right. You brought that up. So there you are. You got Al Shendick and you're on Diamond 4 John Fry. And then now you're standing at first base at the Olympics. I mean, that transition has to be an amazing journey, but was there any moments while you were there where you went, I can't believe I'm here?
Yeah, I tried. I don't know if it was like, I think the first day when we went out there and we got a chance just to walk on the diamonds, that's exactly what it was. I can't believe this is actually happening. I can't believe I'm actually here. After that, it was people that I had spoken to who have had the chance to be there before. It was like, Frankie, just try so hard to soak every minute up because it goes so fast, right? So that those emotions of joy and gratitude were probably like emanating from me in like waves that were, because I really wanted to do that. And for me, experiencing it like that was a tribute to all of the people, coaches, players, umpires who helped me to get there. Because that's really, that actually, I think, is a true testament of who I am. I live my life with a very positive outlook. And so I just thought that all of those people that have helped me get there, that was my best way of honoring them, was to be as true to me as I could be. And I certainly did carry all of those people with me. And Al was, as you know, Al passed away a few years ago. And so I just wish that I could have thanked him myself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's one thing I wish I could have done, but I hope he knows, because I honestly wouldn't be here without him. Like, there's been tons of people, but without Al, it wouldn't have happened. Cause he like pestered me to start umpiring. I mean, pestered. And I remember him saying, Frankie, I know it seems really like outside of your comfort zone, but I know you're going to love it. And he said, and I just have this feeling that you're going to be really good at it. So I just wish you would give it a shot. And so I honestly, without his encouragement, none of this would have happened. So it really hit me like a ton of bricks while I was there, that he was the most pivotal person to to me being there and everything that's happened to me along the way.
He was watching. You know, he was watching.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go back a second and add a little humor after a somber moment. Frankie, I threw it out and you didn't answer and you danced around it. Bang, bang, Frankie, tie to the runner, or what are we talking about here?
Well, technically, there's never really a tie.
Well, you're so, right.
That's true.
Yep.
So you're still not going to answer. Okay. All right. That's fair.
I have an answer. So we're playing. We're at the farm. I'll always remember this. And I don't know why. So we're at the farm. And my Uncle Lionel was playing with us. And I think we're 10 or 12 years old. Maybe my brother and my cousin and I. And we're just, you know, screwing around at the farm. And he's playing. And there was a play where somebody said that tie goes to the runner, and he snaps back right away. He goes, "Nope, tie goes to the biggest guy." And I'll always remember that tie goes to the biggest guy.
That's funny. Yeah.
There you go. Awesome.
I hope that's the case if I ever get a bang bang play at first. That would be huge. I want to be able to say I beat out an infield single at some point before I finish this game.
Oh, dude.
No bang, start. Bang, or the knees hitting first base, yeah, and then the stomach hitting, yeah, first base.
And
then
you scorpion slide bang, behind bang it, play. And you have to got scrapes on your knees, but you don't want to act, yeah, hurt. It's so embarrassing.
The bang, bang is the bang of the ball off the wooden fence, then throwing it back in for a close play at one.
That's right.
Bang, bang.
It's still a bang, bang. Does the tie at that point then go to me because I hit it far? More or is
a,
it?
It's more of a bang. Bang.
You're right. Play. Yeah.
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 Right on.
The time between bangs is up for debate. But still, I just wanted to kind of get a perspective because I've used that line coaching only when my team is batting.
I don't think it's an official rule, Donnie.
I don't think it is. I'm just looking for some input on the other side. Yeah. When my team is batting, I think the tie should go to the runner. And of course, when my defenders make a great play, of course they should get the out.
So realistically, if it's that close, the umpire's got to make a call. They're going to get it right or wrong, but it's going to be close. It's the closest play, right? It's
okay. I got a question for Frankie. Okay, so defender, the shortstop, makes an unreal play. Okay, and the ball goes across the field, and it is a bang bang play. Do you in your mind go, "Man, that was a great play. I got to give him that." Be honest.
Oh, you know what? When I'm at John Fry and there's not like 1,000 cameras on me, sure. Yeah. But as Bob Stanton liked to remind us, there might not have been people in the stands, but there were a lot of cameras there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so it's really just one of those things where you got to
try and make your best call, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You just got to try and do the best you can to get it right. Yeah.
So you did mention that there were a lot of cameras, and unfortunately there wasn't allowed to be a lot of people there, but the people watching at home, like I know Canada as a nation supported that event very strong. And we talked to Mark a bit about how the sport itself did a fantastic job of positioning it as a great game to watch on TV, live, whatever. And the hopes of it coming back into the Olympics have to be, they couldn't have done anything more to make a strong case for the game, because the game, it played so well on TV and it's so fast. And, you know, you talk about, I make the joke about bang bang plays at first, but you make it a really good point. The players are so fast, the fielders are so smooth, that almost every single play at first is so split second. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, well, I want to go back a little bit because we talked about two games you did, but and we mentioned that you did the final game and you had the opportunity to be there. Can you talk about that? As kind of our, because we're almost at an hour already, if you can believe it. But I want to hear about that experience, because that is as good as it gets.
So, yeah, it's just like, it's such a an honor to be assigned to that kind of a game. It's also really cool when the coaches come out and they know you, and they're also like, they're excited for you to be a part of that, right? I don't know what to say, Donnie. It's like, it's such a, just to be a part of it and to watch it and to let the players do their thing and to not, like, I didn't think that there was anything in the medal games, either the bronze or the gold. And actually all week, I just didn't feel like the umpires impacted anything. The athletes were able to demonstrate and to determine the outcome, which is exactly what it should be. in all instances. And that's exactly what happened in the final. I thought Japan totally, totally deserved that game. And I think it was the first time in years that there was more than a one-run differential between U.S. and Japan. Usually it's only a one-run differential. But there was like this amazing defensive play. Amanda Chydester, their best bat, one of their best batters for Team USA was up to bat. They had runners on first and second with one out. They were down by two runs. It was the perfect scenario. She gunned this ball down to third base. The ball hit the third baseman in the forearm. It ricocheted up into the air. The shortstop made this amazing catch and then doubled the runner from second. And Chydester comes off and she's standing in the dugout and she looks like her jaw's on the ground like, what just happened? Yeah. Like, it was the most amazing. I just don't even know how to describe, like, just being a part of it and seeing the plays all week, but then even watching the caliber of the gold medal game and the athleticism, it was just... I agree with you 100%. There's nothing the athletes and coaches could have done more to highlight the spectacularness of softball. And I just felt this amazing wave of support from back home as well throughout the whole week. Like, people were watching and like, it was really cool. I don't think not having fans there physically didn't impact the game at all. I mean, the intensity from the players was like, you knew that there were Olympic medals on the line. Yeah.
So you said something actually that I'm going to give a shout out to my dad, who my dad umped for over 30 years in Alberta and Saskatchewan. So I grew up at the Diamond watching games. And the one comment you kind of made that he mentions quite a bit, even now, he hasn't umped in 8 years probably, but the best games he remembers are the ones that the fans and players don't remember him being there. So when the umpire doesn't have to make anything where it was, well, we lost because of this or that, the games that are so smooth that the calls are just so easy and the players decide the game, those were his best memories. And it sounds like that's what ended up happening, especially in the medal games. That's important, that there's never going to be that sort of, wow,
major.
There was that, yep, that controversial call or play that turned the tide. They were determined 100% by the athletes on the field. So that's, you can't ask for better than that.
Yeah, I think that the crew should be really proud of themselves for exactly that. I mean, you want the players to be able to have that opportunity. And I think they had the opportunity to do just that. You know, we want to be there to adjudicate and do our thing. But at the end of the day, it's their game. And they should have every opportunity to and not be impacted by anything that we do.
Your bang bang calls it first, for example. We don't want that to be the determining factor.
No, you don't want any of that to be, you don't want any of that to be a factor. You just want the girls and the players and the coaches to be able to demonstrate why they're there as well, because they earned their right to be there. You know, and I don't know, I just think the games were amazing. Like, I think Canada in particular should be super proud of losing to US 1-0, losing to Japan 1-0 in extra innings. Like, those are the best. That was the best performance they have ever had against Team Japan, like, ever. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So they should be really proud of that.
Okay, so we're at an hour. I wanted to, first of all, thank you for coming on. Always a pleasure. I hope, I've got a couple years of hanging on to my ISC dream with the Pirates. I hope to see you there. I know the ISCs are going on right now. Bit of a different year this year, and I'm sure it goes back full swing next year, but love to see you there. However, let's get into shots. I know you've been on the cast before, so you know what's going on, and we did have some humorous stories offline. Who wants to start with the parting shots? Okay, good. You go ahead, Tosh.
Okay, so I've got a pump and a shot. Okay, so we talked a little bit about Razor. Right. And catching all those games. And I mean, the old fella did an awesome job. And I want to pump his tires a little bit here, too, because, you know, as sore as we are, I can't imagine how sore he is from up and down and his old crickety knees and, you know, his arm and everything else. But, you know, Razor did a fantastic job. Now, he got his steps in for sure, because it seemed like on every third warm up pitch, it was going to the screen. And every time he threw the ball down, it wasn't coming. It was clean it. You know, you had to wipe the dust off it, right? So
there's the backhand right there.
Yeah,
right?
But no, he did a fantastic job. No, that's not my shot. My shot is actually to my brother. This is the shot at Patty Mac. So, Patty Mac again, you know, he turns 50 this year, so he's in that realm too. And I mean, but he's in pretty good shape, and he played well, he hit well, everything's good. And I mean, it's not a secret that, you know, probably game three, game four, Tosh was hobbling out there pretty good. Like I was sore, you know, I wasn't complaining, but I was on the gun a lot, and I was sore, and it was the usual three Advils a game to just get through it, blah, blah, blah. Okay. He comes out in our last defensive inning, right? As I'm hobbling out to my position, he comes running out and he looks at me and he goes, "I think I tweaked my groin a little bit." I almost punched him right in the face. Thinking, you know, you're complaining about tweaking your groin a little bit, and you got guys out here that are hobbling around, you know, and you're just kind of sprinting out here, and I think I tweaked my groin a little bit. I've been mad at him before, but yeah, almost knocked him out right there in the field.
It probably made you think about the tweak that you've done at that exact moment too. Like you're probably, well, you probably had tweaks in your knees, your back, your arm,
I had a groin,
neck,
a hammy, a knee, and a neck.
Well, there you go.
All throbbing at the same time. Not good.
Yeah, I haven't had a hamstring since like the early 2000s, so it's tough to argue about.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyways, that's my pump razor's tire and a shot at Patty Mac.
Very nice. Dean, do you want to go next?
Yeah, well, sure. I was going to kind of have a shot around razor with, obviously, with the, you know, with the cookie thing, but we kind of got into that a little bit early. But you know, on a serious note here, we lost a pitcher this week, a brother, right? Robbie Scheller passed away this week.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty big, you know, think back to your days and, you know, growing up in the game. I know he was one of the guys I looked to when I first came in as probably one of the most amazing guys I ever saw throw. You know, in my brain, it was 100 miles an hour, if nothing, you know, like it was, you know, and he was just such an, you know, exciting guy to watch every time he was on the diamond. Didn't matter if they were playing in a game that didn't matter or nothing. Everybody wanted to see Robbie throw. And so obviously just this week, you know, we send our condolences out to the family and friends. And I know that was a big buzz around the park this weekend that, you know, everybody was thinking about it. And so. So that's, yeah. So I want to send a little shout out to the family there and just say we're thinking about you, and the ball community loves you, and we're going to miss Robbie dearly. So,
and we would be remiss. And I mean, he was the scariest guy to face as well, because everybody is very well aware of his vision problem.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So when you throw the ball that hard, but you still can't really see where home plate is, that scared the living shit out of me, you know. And he threw a bowling ball. Like we talk about how heavy ball that Dino throws or whatever. He threw that little cutter dipper that went away from lefties. If you hit it, I'm sure he's the reason I had bat bite back in the day. Right. Like, so yeah, he'll be missed. And, you know, only got to play with him a little bit with 1 year, I guess, Steelcraft, but the other was Masters. And yeah.
We a lot of years battling against him and with
him. For sure.
Yeah. So
Well, yeah, tough to follow that. My shot is going off the map here a bit.
Are you still complaining about having to play early in Irma?
Nope.
Oh, okay, that's done.
That one's done now. So this last weekend, a great friend of mine, Braden Arcan, who's been on the cast, it was his stag in Canmore.
Oh yeah.
And you know, We golfed Silvertip, and if anyone who's ever met me knows that I don't enjoy golf. I find it terrible, but tough not to want to swing a club or two at this course. It's picturesque. It's beautiful. Golfing with Keegan and Braden Arcand, as anyone's ever watched them play the game, they smash the ball, and that could be a golf ball, a softball. I'm sure if they hit a football, they'd smash it 500 feet. It was humbling, to say the least. And I was the only guy in the group who didn't really care for golf. And I've never felt so ostracized from a group of people trying to hack my way through this top five course in Canada. It was fairly embarrassing. So my shot, I guess, is to Braden that, you know, we could have done a myriad of other things to help maybe make me feel a little included. I know it's not about me, but Braden, maybe we start on a smaller course. You know, we could do maybe sand greens, or yeah, we could do putt. I love it. But it is hard to watch those guys drive the ball to the green on a par four, and it takes me 7 shots to finagle my way up there. And yeah, it was embarrassing. And I got filmed once, and they sent it to Jones. And Corey Jones is merciless in terms of telling guys when they suck at something, and it's tough. So
essentially, what you're saying is Braden Stagg should have been all about you.
Well, not all about me, but just not all about Braden. You know, you got 7 guys there. Let's mix it up a bit. That's my shot. I don't know if it stands, but love the guy. Excited for his wedding. Hope I don't have to golf again for a while.
So I played ball with Braden and Keegan's mom, Michelle.
Yep.
Way back in the day. And so I've known Braden and Keegan since they were kids. And I know you just did a shot at him, but I got to say,
please,
a little pump up here. He and his sister, Jordana, and Keegan have turned out to be such beautiful human beings.
Oh, yeah.
And as an official, I'm super proud of Braden because he's doing so well in hockey officiating. Mm-hmm. And I never really thought that he would go into it, but he has the perfect personality for it. And as do many players. I mean, so my pump up is for all of you and all of the players out there. I don't know if officials give you credit enough for the piece that you play in our development, because if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't be able to hone our craft. And so I really appreciate all of the great games that you three have been a part of, that I've had the chance to be a part of, that made me a better official. So thank you so much. And thank you for asking me to be a part of this mm-hmm. today.
We had no problem screaming at you, Frankie. None.
And it's nice Zero. That it hasn't gone to waste, right? Like when we yelled at you back in the day, that means you, the umpire you are today. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that bang, bang play. What would have Tosh yelled at me on that play?
See.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys.
I don't remember yelling at you, Frankie.
No, I don't either. You intimidate me.
You guys made me, you guys, I wanted to work. I wanted to be really good for you. And I think that showed. I mean, I was always really, I wasn't nervous, but I always, like, when I came into a game, I knew I was there to do a job and I wanted to do the best job that I could. And it didn't matter to me if it was out at John Fry or if it was in Irma or if it was at Provincials. Like, I always wanted to give my best that I could on that day. And actually, anyone who I talk to in officiating, that's one thing that I always tell them is you cannot afford in this avocation to give less than your best, regardless of the game that you're doing. Because if I'm doing a U14 game and it turns out that Tosh's daughter is on that team, well, if I'm not giving what he knows I can give, what does that say about me?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then he leaves the diamond thinking, well, man, I thought she was better than that. Like as a person, as a human being, because it actually is a question of integrity to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You never want to leave the park where they go, I thought she was better than that.
Right. And I think that it's the same with all of the players that you're coaching. Like you don't want your players coming and only giving 75% when you need them to be giving 100.
You never know who's watching.
That's exactly right. Exactly.
I think what happens with us as pitchers, we sometimes forget, you know, I mean, yes, I know I'm speaking to myself here, but we'll argue with an umpire over a call. Well, I think the first thing we can think about is, do we hit every spot that we try to hit as a pitcher? No, we're not going to be perfect. And so I honestly don't expect that an umpire is going to be perfect on every pitch in every spot. Or am I going to yell at him? Yeah, every once in a while I'll mutter something, but I think I've gotten a little smarter, a little wiser in my years. And, you know, if I was going to say to young pitchers out there, you got to not, you know, the umpire shouldn't have that effect on you. You know, if you're thinking about where you're throwing the ball and all that kind of stuff, that's probably where our focus should be lying. So nobody's perfect, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's also about relationships too, though. Because, I mean, if you've got a super good relationship with someone, you might be a little bit more forgiving than if it's somebody that you already don't really like that much.
Right.
So what you're saying is now that you've been on the cast twice, all the calls are going our way. Every one of them.
Man, I can't wait for that bang, bang play at first for Donnie. It's coming up.
Frankie for Masters 2022.
That's right. There you go. Yep. See you in Newfoundland, bud.
Newfoundland. Oh, my God. That's on my bucket list, Newfoundland. So
there you go.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see you.
It would be fantastic to see you out there. That would be amazing.
Awesome, amazing. Guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on, Frankie.
Thank you again.
Take care.
Right.
Cheers.
Say goodnight, Donnie.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to Tuesday Talk. New episodes weekly on Tuesdays. For more info, visit myloidminsternow.com or subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.